This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
The Mark Reardon Show.
Loser, loser, loser.
Witch hunt, scam, hoax.
You're gonna literally see the craters on the moon with your own eyes.
My name's Joe Biden. Can't sing, can't dance, can't do much of anything.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Feels like Monday. Sue Thomas and Fred.
Oh man,
Bonner.
Is that
Does
true?
It? Yeah, I know. Trying to muster the energy here. Been getting through it all day. As I said to Ethan Hannaford, who is, we're kind of in transition mode here at the Mark Reardon Show because Abby left a couple weeks ago, so we have some producers filling in until we decide who's going to get stuck with me full time. And I said, Ethan, it's Tuesday. It's not Monday. And he said, yeah, but the good news is it's Tuesday. We're that much closer to the weekend. Although, Sue, you and I have charted this over the years.
Yeah, we have.
I don't know what it is about these holiday weeks, but they tend to we get into
drag.
Today. And then, don't let that happen this week.
Of course not. Of course not. But it will.
No, I don't think it will. And here's why.
Okay.
You sounded
hopeful.
Like Biden there for a minute.
Yeah. What are you whispering for, Sue?
Yes.
It's not going to. I have hopes that it'll go quickly because the NFL season kicks off on Thursday night. So the Chiefs and the Ravens, that's going to be big. The Packers, of course, down in Brazil. You hear they banned the X down there?
Yeah,
that's
I did hear that.
But Elon's trying to do a little backdoor thing with the Starlink. I'm not sure if I understand all that. But I do think that the week's going to go fast because I don't know if Sue would be in this group, but some of us are very excited about the start of the NFL season.
Sure.
In fact, let me start with
when
a little football
here. When do the
Steelers
play? Yeah,
they would play on Sunday,
there
I think.
There you go.
If they don't play on Monday night or Sunday night. So there'll only be a few options. There'll be Thursday, Friday. I don't think any NFL games this weekend on Saturday, but then, you know, all day Sunday, there's Sunday night. We try to cram as many in as we possibly can. Now, of course, we had college football. Fred, did you watch college football? That's
well,
a no. I'll
no,
take that
no,
as a not, no.
Other than the Mizzou game on
You didn't watch
State,
anything else?
Thursday,
no, you didn't watch Boston College and Florida State last night?
Wow, that was something, though,
so
wasn't
here's
it?
What's interesting.
What happened?
Now, I'm gonna kind of bring this home. Sue, I think you can even appreciate this. So Florida State went to there's a payoff here, ladies and gentlemen. If you're bored by football, I promise you there's a payoff. We're going to get off of football into something really disgusting here in a second. So that would be my tease to you if you don't like football. But Florida State went to Ireland last week, and they kicked off the season against Georgia Tech, I think it was, and they lost. Like, they were the 11th-ranked team, or the 10th-ranked team. Mizzou was number 11. Florida State was ranked 10. They lost their opening game. So now they have Boston College, big Sunday night matchup. They're back in the States. They're hosting Boston College. Boston College, you know, they got a new coach. Bill O'Brien used to be in the NFL, and he was in college before that. How good are they? Well, they beat Florida State last night, like, outright. But here's what's interesting. There's a dude. Have you heard about this, Fred?
No,
the guy on the internet?
I don't think so.
Ethan brought this to my attention. So there's a guy. He's no longer out there, and you're going to know why in a second. He is at 321 Knoll. Right, which it's the Seminoles, the Florida State Seminoles. So he's
okay.
A big fan. Here's what he tweets out on the 27th of August, 2024. That'd be Friday, right? Friday at 321 Knoll says, if Florida State loses to Boston College this weekend, I will eat dog, rhymes with
Dookie?
Pit, yeah, out of a red Solo cup with a spoon. And post a video of me doing it. They even mentioned it on SportsCenter.
Team's down, that's understandable. They're not down as bad as that dude on the internet who said he did dog poop out of a Solo cup. Then you think you just get to delete your account. And the internet ain't going to forget that, buddy. You don't get to just keep it moving and get a new name or something. People are going to find you. How that works.
Yeah, that is how that works. But he's gone, man. He has gone into hiding after promising to eat a steaming pile of dog dookie, as the team at TMZ has written this afternoon. And now there's people that want to hold him, you know, accountable. This reminds me, certainly, Fred, it might remind you of the wager that I made with Chris
Smith. It reminded me of it, and I said, wasn't even there.
Right, and people are still angry, justifiably so, to this day. When I told Chris I would shave my head if Trump loses the election in 2016, then the day after that he called me. And he goes, dude, you don't have to shave your head. I'm like, okay, how about we go to a Cardinals game instead? And I wouldn't do anything differently with this. I would do the same thing. I'd hide like this guy. I can totally relate to what he's going through.
You know what? His would be worse. Come on.
No, I think it would. Far worse. Are you kidding me?
I mean, there's
But see, that's how confident he was in his predictions. So Boston College goes to Columbia to play Mizzou in a couple of weeks, so it could be interesting. I'm heading up this weekend to see the Buffalo game, so I'm gonna stick by a fast week because there's lots of football and a lot of other stuff happening. Now, unfortunately, let me kind of lay out the show here. We had a violent weekend in St. Louis. That's something I want to review here in just a couple of minutes. We have Charles Lipson, who is Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago, coming up. He'll weigh in on some politics in just a bit at 3:25. Heather McDonald will be back. Sue, one of your favorites.
Ooh, love her.
Senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, writes about crime and policing quite a bit. She wrote a piece about Tim Walz in Minnesota, but also kind of reminded me that we didn't have Heather on a few weeks ago during the anniversary of Ferguson, which I guess has been a month ago already. Cusumano was going to weigh in. The Cardinals didn't have a bad weekend against the Yankees, which was kind of amazing. Fred, I tuned into that game on Sunday. I think it was the Cardinals were down 7-2. And I said, okay, I'm done. I was like paying no attention, right? And then the next thing I know, I'm watching that Florida State Boston College game, and I see the scroll. They won like 14-7. They scored a couple of touchdowns after I, you know, tuned out, right?
Yeah, a lot of heavy hitting late.
So Cusumano, we'll talk about that. We'll get some Mizzou stuff as well. And then City, I watched that game yesterday. SCL City played at home here. They play. It's always confusing to me, right?
And it was a Sunday afternoon game.
Yeah, so but here's the thing. Like, this is what throws me with the soccer thing, Sue, because if you got two teams up there, like it's the Cardinals and the Yankees.
They do it in reverse.
The Yankees are the home team, so they're second. In the MLS, they do it in reverse. So it says St. Louis at, who are they playing? Or it doesn't say at, but it's St. Louis versus, who the hell did they play? Well, whoever the hell they played yesterday. But they were second. So I'm thinking, well, and I didn't have to think too hard because I saw the red in the stadium. But it does. I don't know why they do that. Why can they not be, well, thank you. It was the Galaxy, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be so confusing if they just did it the way that American sports do it. Stop being so communistic. That's what I say. Anyway, Cusumano's coming up. We got Jim Talent tonight and a bunch of other stuff as well. Oh, Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com. Christian, I've mentioned him before as being one of the few conservative film critics, and he's going to weigh in on a couple of things related to politics because there's been some blowback for Cheryl Hines in particular, RFK Jr.'s wife.
I have a great tweet that she sent out that I'll forward to you when he decided to hook up with Trump.
Well, I'll be curious because I saw that. I saw her reaction, but she's getting the crap beat out of her. And, you know, there's going to be probably some repercussions. She of, I guess, probably best known for Curb Your Enthusiasm.
For sure.
Larry David's wife on that.
For sure.
So after all that I started with here, let me segue into something that's not so positive. Oh, let me get one more positive thing in here. I was told 2 hours ago that they're at the hospital and that Natalie is in labor, my son in Houston. So we've had a couple of things
that's exciting.
Yeah, we've had some false alarms, if you will.
Yes, but
this looks like it's the real deal. Now, they were going to induce on Thursday if she doesn't have the baby. So that's the early stages of being in labor. Wow. And I will certainly keep you posted.
Oh, that's so exciting.
But on the negative front here, you had just since Friday here in St. Louis. And this is going to kind of go in with what Heather McDonald is going to talk about in the next hour or two. We're told time and time again from Cori Bush and Tashara Jones and Kim Gardner and all these other idiots out there, Rasheen Aldridge, that, you know, it's the white police officers that are a problem. We've had 13 people that have been shot in St. Louis, 5 just in one incident downtown on Sunday morning. And probably the worst is this 4-year-old girl who was shot to death by another child just before midnight on Monday night in North St. Louis. Now, Sue, I don't know how much you've dug into this story. It's outrageous. There were no adults that were present.
They were 4 kids, none over the age of 10.
She's the youngest victim to die by gunfire in St. Louis this year. And here's something else. You know, the cops get the crap beat out of them. We have a police chief that doesn't have the cojones to back up officers
That's right.
because he's so, you know, beholden to Tishara on some of this nonsense. And you have cops, because this little girl was in such bad shape, they didn't even wait for the ambulance to arrive. So they put her in the back of a patrol car. One officer drove the 5 miles to the hospital. The other tried to save her in the back seat, and then she died at Children's Hospital. So that's just a terrible story.
It's a horrible story.
And to your point, four kids, all under the age of 10, were in the home without adult supervision. The mom showed up at the hospital. The young kid who fired the weapon apparently got, you know, injury to his face, probably because the gun kicked him in the face. One of the kids called 911. This was 11:56 p.m. on Monday night. So this is right before midnight last night between Broadway and Hall Street. And I guess there were no adults that were present. The mother shows up at the hospital. The police spokesperson says, look, we don't know who was responsible for watching the kids. For all we know, the mom had someone set up and that person was not. I mean, I don't know. We have questions, but good Lord. They say they have a working theory of where the gun was when the children found it, but they're not giving out details until they talk with one of the kids that was in the home, and we'll see if there's any charges. But this is the thing that really strikes me at this point, and I've mentioned this several times this year, and this is why it's just ridiculous that members of the Board of Aldermen, including some of the leaders, and that Tishara Jones isn't out there on Twitter or in front of a podium holding a news conference about this, because you damn well know that she would do it if there was a white cop that was involved in anything that was even suspicious. Even if it was justifiable shooting, they'd be holding a news conference and there'd be BLM crap over and over and over again. We've had 50 kids this year, 50 kids ages 17 or younger that have been injured or killed by gunfire in the city of St. Louis. 15 of those have died. Most of them involved teenagers. Some of them, they say, were accidental shootings. So what's really to blame here? Who's to blame? This is a culture thing. We've talked about this for so long. I understand that poverty is connected, right? We have parents that have to work and maybe they don't have childcare, but this is beyond that. And there is no accountability for these things. I hope to God that whoever is responsible here, and I doubt it was, you know, the other kid, even though they shouldn't be waving around a firearm, but some adults should have to be held accountable for this, whether it's the mom or somebody else. Meantime, in Chicago, they've had another violent weekend as well. I mean, we're just kind of Chicago Junior to a certain extent. They have a lot more people up there, but every weekend, the stories are often the same. And there was something that really was weird up there. Fred, you hear about this
subway?
The thing that happened on the subway? Yeah. So have you heard about this?
I haven't.
Three men, one woman, randomly murdered while sleeping on a Blue Line train. I guess they think that they might have been homeless. Yeah, it says four people. This was yesterday morning, sleeping when a lone gunman shot and killed them. It's believed that some, possibly all the victims were homeless. A CTA employee discovers the bodies on one train car after it reached the end of the line yesterday morning. The fourth victim was found in a separate car on the same train. Don't they have cameras on those trains?
I thought so.
You would think. It says officials say they were shot while the train was still heading toward Forest Park Station. They did not appear to have been robbed. They think that they were just completely random. And when the cops got there, nobody was on the scene. So that's absolutely a bizarre story. So there you go. Some positive things here as we start the week on 97.1 FM Talk. We'll take a break. We'll come back with my friend Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago. We're off and running here a Tuesday after.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Afternoon edition of the Mark Reardon Show. We got Sue's News coming up here in the next hour. After that, Heather McDonald, who is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. We love when Heather chimes in on crime issues in particular. Hey, first day of school at our radical universities like Columbia today, and it just sounded like a normal day of classes.
Ask you why you guys are out here today.
We're here because there is still an ongoing genocide that the United States is materially and politically responsible for.
Are you a student? Are you a student here?
I am a student.
I just wonder, do you think it's going to be a lot of protests again this year? I know last year, right, it was like a little bit, people thought it was disruptive, they were upset. What do you think is going to happen this year?
We have been very clear that this will not stop until Colombia has divested from its complicity in Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people. That's all I have to say.
All right, well, here's a couple things I have to say. First of all, I'm not totally convinced he's a student. If he is a student, his parents should, you know, pull the rug out from underneath him right away, because it's just embarrassing what these kids are doing, especially given the fact that you had hostages that were brutally murdered, and that story came out over the weekend. Charles Lipson is back with us. He also is the author of a brand new book, Free Speech 101, A Guide for Students. I suppose, Charles, they have the freedom of speech to do that as long as they're not becoming violent, but we don't know what's around the corner for these universities. How are you on this Tuesday?
I'm doing good, but these students are violent, and they've gotten, in effect, permission from university leadership, and in addition, from Alvin Bragg, the district attorney for Manhattan, who, when these people have illegally occupied buildings and all the rest, he just let them off with a pat on the back and a well done, good fellow.
Yeah, we know that the Columbia University president finally resigned, but how about the new president maybe taking a little different tact here, because it doesn't sound like they're off to a good start there in New York.
Well, unless I crack down, it'll just be terrible. I noticed that one thing that's happening, and Jews are often a kind of canary in a coal mine on some of these issues, but these apply to all students. There was a top Jewish prep school in New York, which always sends its best students to Columbia. This year, for the first time in decades, they sent no students to Columbia. The students just avoided it. They're avoiding Harvard. They're avoiding Yale. They're avoiding Princeton. They're avoiding the schools. They're coming to places like the University of Chicago. They're coming to the best schools in the South, including Vanderbilt, which is taking a leading position on this. And I hope that they'll be coming to WashU, which did do some cracking down last year, and I hope we'll be strong in supporting free speech this year.
Yeah, we did have some pretty good reactions, I think, from WashU. But then again, you know, Sue, when all was said and done, didn't some of that also, nobody really pressed charges, and some of the consequences at WashU, I'm not sure that they were followed through upon, Charles. So it will be interesting. It's been quiet here in St. Louis along that front. But tell me about the new book, Free Speech 101.
There are a lot of books out on free speech, as your audience well knows, but there are almost none. In fact, there are none that are actually directed at the students who need them, that tell that student who's saying, I'm protesting what is hyperbolically called genocide,
right,
what those students can and cannot do. And the short answer is they can peacefully protest as soon as they start painting on buildings, blocking the entrance of other students, yelling in ways that classes can't be held, intimidating other students quite directly, then those are not permitted under free speech. Now, whether a university decides it is willing to permit them is another matter. But essentially, public universities don't have that choice. They are simply required under the First Amendment. So the University of Missouri at St. Louis operates under different rules than WashU does, but WashU should operate under the same rules.
You know, one of the things that I remember from back when, and this is where things have changed dramatically, I do think that social media and the way the media covers some of these things have a role, but I was a freshman at Mizzou in 1983. I don't remember if it was that year or the following year. There were protests that were pretty active on campus over apartheid, and, you know, there was a call for, I think it was even Barbara Euling was the chancellor of Mizzou. I can't even believe that a name came back to me like that. But there were calls to, you know, divest any kind of investments out of South Africa. But none of that, I remember walking around, you know, the campus and seeing the protests, none of that ever interfered with my ability to go to a class or to attend a class.
Right. And so peaceful protests are perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with those at all. What's wrong is the shouting down of others blocking their entrance, doing all those kinds of things. People know that those are wrong. They do them because they can get away with them.
Yeah, but there's like, this is one of my favorite stories of the last month or so. I just accessed this on my iPad. This is from the middle of August, August 14th. We had all these things that happened at UCLA, and they had to actually go to court. And a judge actually had to say to UCLA, the campus can't be allowed to become a Jew exclusion zone. Why in the hell did a judge have to get involved in something like that? That's outrageous in and of itself, Charles.
It is so disturbing. I've just written an article. I'll let you know when it comes out on how this these attacks on free speech and incidentally on Jews have moved from the right to the left. They were exclusions of free speech in the 1950s were largely right wing against communism, and of course the direct attacks on Jews were led by the Ku Klux Klan and the like. To see them led by professors of English, and to this, by the way, this doesn't start in college. This is a serious matter in high schools and in elite high schools in particular. That's actually one of the most interesting elements of this suppression of free speech, is that it has been led by so-called elite universities. There's an organization called FIRE, a Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, which ranks universities for free speech. There is no Ivy League university that is ranked even below average. They're ranked well below average, and some they've had to invent new categories. They invented abysmal for a couple of them. But this is a problem, especially at Penn, Harvard, Yale, and so forth, and it's just inexcusable. My own view is that this will only stop when the boards of trustees require it of private universities and hold the presidents responsible. And it will only stop in public universities if they bring lawsuits in the North or are in southern states where the local legislature essentially holds them accountable.
So, you know, this is beyond what's happening on college campuses, clearly, but the free speech wars are at a very interesting point right now. And I don't know how much you've kind of looked into what's happening in Brazil. X, formerly Twitter, is now banned in Brazil. Elon Musk is no longer accessible in the largest country, although I think that he maybe is trying a little bit of a back channel on that. You know, one of the things that's interesting about this, it seems like a pretty significant story, certainly when it comes to free speech rights. There's been nothing from the White House on this that I'm aware of. Now, KJP just had a briefing, so we probably got something that was maybe asked in the briefing room, but this seems like a pretty significant story.
Well, did you see that Keith Ellison, the left-wing former representative who's now the Attorney General of Minnesota,
right,
praised Brazil for doing
praised this. Them. That, you know, from Keith Ellison, that does not surprise me because I know what he's all about. But I guess this is, and this is where it gets a little tricky out there. They're trying to clamp down on fake news, right? And maybe the type of fake news that the legacy media here has been worried about since 2016, even though they were the purveyors of fake news, you know, for all those years. But this is an amazing censorship push. And, you know, when you think about what's happening in some of the other countries, even across the pond in the UK, when it comes to Twitter and free speech rights, I think there's horrible things that people say, certainly whether it's social media or, you know, just in their regular lives. But we do, at least in this country, we still have the right to say those things, I think.
We free speech rights, all listeners should understand, free speech rights in the United States are far, far better than in any country in the world, not just in theory, but in practice. But the people who are pushing our government to look more and more like a European socialist government in general are also against free speech, and for the same reasons. They essentially say this kind of speech could harm Group X or Group Y. We favor Group X or Group Y, and therefore we're against it. And over the past week or two, I've been reading nothing but books written by progressives against free speech. And they're all against it on basically those grounds, that if there is free speech, then it will be harder to push a progressive agenda. And they may be right.
Yeah, well.
But that's not a reason. And by the way, you're seeing at places like the New York Times more and more articles that are flatly against the U.S. Constitution.
Well, you know what? My friend Dave Strom over at HotAir.com highlighted this today, because you can actually look at some of the headlines that are kind of stunning when it comes to the Constitution, you know, from the New York Times and other outlets. And it's quite horrifying. But again, you know, we've talked about this just in terms of what's happening on these college campuses. You can see that the progressives, the young progressives, are kind of running the show. And I think they're kind of running the show at some of these, you know, legacy media publications. We've known that. But this is the New York Times. The Constitution is sacred. Is it also dangerous? Here's another New York Times. Is the Constitution obstructing American democracy? Let's give up on the Constitution. The U.S. lacks what every democracy needs. We had to force the Constitution to accommodate democracy, and now it's time to get rid of it. I mean, Charles, that's quite stark, I think.
I agree, and it's showing up in the polling as well. I've looked at a number of articles, and you're seeing, for example, something like almost half college students believe it's okay to shout down somebody you disagree with, and that's basically true of the faculty as well. That is, if you look at the faculty in the sciences, they're in favor of free speech and free inquiry. Maybe in economics they are. But if you look in English literature or French literature or anthropology, their progressive ideals override this interest in free speech. That old line that you and I both remember, I disagree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
Right.
I always say, friends, I will defend to your death your right to say it. But these people just don't believe that. They believe, and what it strikes me as being like the era in which the Protestants split off from the Catholics, and these were religious feuds, and if you were on the wrong side, you deserve to be hanged.
Yes, I know. I'm watching The Serpent Queen on Stars right now, and I'm learning all about that. I appreciate you coming on here. The book is available right now, Free Speech 101.
Yes, just go to Amazon, Charles Lipson, Free Speech, and you'll find it.
What do you think? Before I let you go, kind of like your opinion on where the race is right now. Coming off of Labor Day, we've seen a lot of love for Kamala here in the past couple of weeks. The polling that I'm looking at right now shows that she's got a slight lead in the national average, although this is interesting, too. I love, Charles, I don't know if you've noticed what Real Clear is doing. So they're doing a This Day in History with the polls, and you can go every day. So here we are, September 3rd in 2016 on this date. Hillary Clinton led by the Real Clear politics average of 3.9%. In 2020, Biden led by 7.2%. Right now, Harris is up 1.8%, but that is a very narrow lead. Then they also break it down to all of the swing states, and you know the leads are extremely narrow, or Trump has the lead in many of those states.
Yeah, I think my own guess, and it's just a guess, is that Harris is currently peaking. She strikes me as like those Fabergé eggs that were produced in Russia. They had these beautifully crafted outsides, and then there was nothing inside.
Yeah. But we know that, but will that be exposed? Because, you know, she kind of got a free pass with Dana Bash last week.
Oh, Dana Bash was just dreadful. I mean, if you ask a question without a follow-up, what you get is a canned answer. And to get beyond the canned answer, you have to press beyond it. Although I will say that when Kamala was asked what she would do on the first day, she had no answer for that.
It was ridiculous.
Just bidi, bidi, bidi.
Right.
But I thought it was a dreadful thing. The thing is, people are not going to be voting so much for her. Her votes are going to be largely anti-Trump votes. And the question is whether he can mobilize enough pro-Trump votes and get past the fact that, quite incredibly, quite remarkably, she's running as an outsider. even though she's a member of the current administration, was a Democratic senator before that. How the Republicans are letting her get away with it?
Well, I think they're letting her get away with it because Dana Bash is allowing it to happen, and CNN and the legacy media. That's the kind of the way that I see it right now. Charles, we'll see what happens with this a week from tonight. We got another debate. It could be interesting, especially if the mics aren't
That will be a fascinating debate, my friend.
Have a great week. Thank you.
You too.
We'll see you. We got Sue's News coming up for a Monday edition. I'm sorry, correct that. See, I got caught there. It is not Monday. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Look at that. A Tuesday edition Sue's News coming up here. And we'll see if the holiday week will make things go faster or slower. We've kind of covered that topic earlier in the show. So this was a soundbite for those people who've been with the show for a while. We try to update the show opens. We have a rotating number of them right now, and they all have different sound bites, maybe from Senator Kennedy or Joe Biden or, you know, someone like that. For example, the this one kind of comes to mind, although everything on my little my sheets has been different. But, you know, when Joe Biden says something, we feature those. So there was this soundbite was featured for many, many years. It was one of my favorites, and people always reacted to this one. This goes back probably now eight or 9 years, because I would run it in the, the run-up to 2016.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
There you go. This is, by the way, this is the one that I was thinking about with Biden.
God save the queen, man.
You know, little clips like that. So I don't remember where Hillary did that, but she was kind of, doing the fake drawl southern accent. Well, Kamala has done that now a few times on the road as well. And she did it over the weekend and got asked in the briefing room today. So here's where she sounded like this in Detroit. It wasn't necessarily, I don't know, you tell me, Sue. It's not like a southern accent.
You better thank a union member.
You know what I need there? I need Aretha Franklin think. You better think.
Yeah,
that's
a little
what
bit
she
of that.
Sounds like a little bit, right? So then Ducey, KJP didn't like this very much.
Since when does the vice president have what sounds like a southern accent?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well,
I mean, this is...
She was talking about unions in Detroit.
By the way,
of course she knows.
Of course she knows what he's talking about. Which that exactly.
Using one tone of voice.
Is this something that you think?
Same line.
Okay, Peter.
That she used the same line in Pittsburgh, and it sounded like she at least had some kind of a southern drawl.
I mean, do you hear the question that you're? I mean, do you think Americans seriously think that this is an important question? They care. You know what they care about? They care about the economy. They care about lowering costs. They care about health care. That's what Americans care about.
So
that's what they want to hear.
This is something...
They care about, your colleague just asked me about basically we talked about, went back and forth about democracy and freedom.
Oh yeah, that's they're the experts on democracy and freedom, right?
That's what they care about. I'm not even going to entertain some question about the press. It's just hearing it sounds so ridiculous.
Well, but hearing it is
the question. I'm talking about the questions.
Yeah, no, we're talking about something else.
Insane.
Is that how she talks in meetings?
I'm just, Peter, we're moving on.
Okay.
We're still moving on.
Well, it is it's not altogether an outrageous question, because mm-mm. she is. And by the way, that's not the first time she did it. So it is more probably a question for the campaign. But here's the problem. The campaign doesn't communicate.
That's right.
I even saw this... I didn't pull the audio because it was a bunch of blah, blah, blah with Tim Walz. He's at the Minnesota State Fair. It's his state, right? He's very proud to be at the State Fair. He's got his jeans on. He thinks he's doing a good job. He seems, he's having fun. But then he starts talking, about how the State Fair is special and all these things. And then a couple of people say, and it's related to the State Fair, they're asking him questions, right? And then all of a sudden at the end, somebody decides to ask a real question. Governor Walz, do you have any comment about the slaughter of the hostages, including one American, that occurred over the weekend? And then he just turns away, and there's no question.
It's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and they're not being pressed on any of this. Here we are, again, we're a week away, almost a week from this sit-down interview with Dana Bash. Tomorrow will be the week Thursday, I guess. Thursday is when it aired. But my point is, they're not, you know, throughout the weekend, they're not being pressed on any of these things. This is what I love. So Tom Cotton goes on NBC and Meet the Press on Sunday, and he's making some points. And I just want you to hear how this court sort of played out with Kristen Welker, who's the host.
They wanted President Trump there. They wanted to take those photos. You know who the family...
Now, let me set it up just a little bit, because this is the controversy about the photos from last week at Arlington National Cemetery, last Monday, on the anniversary of Abby Gates. So there's been a lot of criticism of this, because they act like Trump took advantage of the situation, even though the families were asking him to be there and they wanted the photos taken. There was a dust up with a member of the cemetery. Apparently that's been worked out. There's no charges that are going to be filed or anything like that. So Tom Cotton is talking about this with Kristen Welker.
They wanted President Trump there. They wanted to take those photos. You know who the family's also invited? Joe Biden, Kamala Harris. Where were they? Joe Biden was sitting at a beach. Kamala Harris was sitting at her mansion in Washington, D.C. She was 4 miles away, 10 minutes. She could have gone to the cemetery and honored the sacrifice of those young men and women. But she hasn't. She never has spoken to them or taken a meeting with them.
All right, so this is where the important part happens. Kristen Welker tries to interject here. Listen.
Well, they did meet with them during the dignified transfer.
Because of
they
her,
were with them at the dignified transfer.
Her and Joe Biden's incompetence, those 13 Americans were killed in Afghanistan.
So when the Americans came back... Yeah. To our soil, there was what they refer to as the dignified transfer. Joe Biden was there. Kamala Harris wasn't there. But my favorite part is that Kristen Welker, the legacy media member who's trying to cheerlead for the Harris Walls team, she has to, you know, say, well, wait a sec. She's wrong, by the way. They had to issue an apology. But, well, they were together. You're just misrepresenting it. You know, they often go to bat for Republicans and try to clarify things. And they're wrong even when they try to clarify it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We got Sue's News coming up for a Monday edition. I'm sorry, correct that. See, I got caught there. It is
not Monday.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Look at that. A Tuesday edition Sue's News coming up here. And we'll see if the holiday week will make things go faster or slower. We've kind of covered that topic earlier in the show. So this was a soundbite for those people who have been with the show for a while. We try to update the show opens. We have a rotating number of them right now, and they all have different sound bites, maybe from Senator Kennedy or Joe Biden or, you know, someone like that. For example, this one kind of comes to mind, although everything on my little my sheets has been different. But, you know, when Joe Biden says something, we feature those. So there was this soundbite was featured for many, many years. It was one of my favorites, and people always reacted to this one. This goes back probably now eight or 9 years, because I would run it in the, the run-up to 2016.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy.
There you go. This is, by the way, this is the one that I was thinking about with Biden.
God save the queen, man.
You know, little clips like that. So I don't remember where Hillary did that, but she was kind of, doing the fake drawl southern accent. Well, Kamala has done that now a few times on the road as well. And she did it over the weekend and got asked in the briefing room today. So here's where she sounded like this in Detroit. It wasn't necessarily, I don't know, you tell me, Sue. It's not like a southern accent.
You better thank a union member. Paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time.
You know what I need there? I need Aretha Franklin thank. You better thank.
Yeah, there's
a
little bit of that.
That's what she sounds like a little bit, right? So then Ducey, KJP didn't like this very much.
Since when does the vice president have what sounds like a southern accent?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well,
I mean, this is...
She was talking about unions in Detroit.
By the way,
of course she knows.
Of course she knows
what
he's talking about. Which, that, exactly.
Using one tone of voice.
Is this something that
same
you think...
Same line...
Okay, Peter.
That she used the same line in Pittsburgh, and it sounded like she at least had some kind of a southern drawl.
Do you hear the question that you're... I mean, do you think Americans seriously think that this is an important question? They care... You know what they care about? They care about the economy. They care about lowering costs. They care about health care.
That's what Americans care about.
So
that's what they want to hear.
This is something...
They care about, your colleague just asked me about democracy. Basically, we talked about, went back and forth about democracy and freedom.
Oh, yeah. That's they're the experts on democracy and freedom, right?
That's what they care about. I'm not even going to entertain some question about the press. It's just hearing it sounds so ridiculous.
Well, but hearing it is...
The question. I'm talking about the questions.
Yeah, we're talking about something else.
Insane.
Is that how she talks in meetings?
I'm just... Peter, we're moving on.
Okay.
We're still moving on.
Well, it is a... You know, it's not altogether an outrageous question because she is. And by the way, that's not the first time she did it. So it is more probably a question for the campaign. But here's the problem. The campaign doesn't communicate.
That's right.
And, you know, I even saw this... I didn't pull the audio because it was a bunch of blah, blah, blah with Tim Walz. He's at the Minnesota State Fair. It's his state, right? He's very proud to be at the state fair. He's got his jeans on. He thinks he's doing a good job. He seems, you know, he's having fun. But then he starts talking, about how the state fair is special and all these things. And then a couple of people say, and it's related to the state fair, they're asking him questions, right? And then all of a sudden at the end, somebody decides to ask a real question.
Uh-oh.
Governor Walz, do you have any comment about the slaughter of the hostages, including one American, that, you know, occurred over the weekend? And then he just turns away and there's no question.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And they're not being pressed on any of this. Here we are. Again, we're a week away, almost a week from this sit-down interview with Dana Bash. Tomorrow will be the week. Thursday, I guess. Thursday is when it aired. But my point is, they're not, throughout the weekend, they're not being pressed on any of these things. This is what I love. So Tom Cotton goes on NBC and Meet the Press on Sunday, and he's making some points. And I just want you to hear how this court sort of played out with Kristen Welker, who's the host.
They wanted President Trump there. They wanted to take those photos. You know who the family...
Now, let me set it up just a little bit, because this is the controversy about the photos from last week at Arlington National Cemetery, last Monday, on the anniversary of Abby Gates. So there's been a lot of criticism of this, because they act like Trump took advantage of the situation, even though the families were asking him to be there and they wanted the photos taken. There was a dust up with a member of the cemetery. Apparently that's been worked out. There's no charges that are going to be filed or anything like that. So Tom Cotton is talking about this with Kristen Welker.
They wanted President Trump there. They wanted to take those photos. You know who the family's also invited? Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Where were they? Joe Biden was sitting at a beach. Kamala Harris was sitting at her mansion in Washington, D.C. She was 4 miles away, 10 minutes. She could have gone to the cemetery and honored the sacrifice of those young men and women, but she hasn't. She never has spoken to them or taken a meeting with them.
All right, so this is where the important part happens. Kristen Welker tries to interject here. Listen.
Well, they did meet with them during the dignified transfer.
Because of
they
her,
were with them at the dignified transfer.
Her and Joe Biden's incompetence, those 13 Americans were killed in Afghanistan.
So when the Americans came back to our soil, there was what they refer to as the dignified transfer. Joe Biden was there. Kamala Harris wasn't there. But my favorite part is that Kristen Welker, the legacy media member who's trying to cheerlead for the Harris Walz team, she has to, say, well, wait a sec. She's wrong, by the way. They had to issue an apology. But, well, they were together. You're just misrepresenting it. You know, they often go to bat for Republicans and try to clarify things. And they're wrong even when they try to clarify it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.